A listener note, this episode originally aired in 2018. It's June 1974. Bob Crandall, the chief financial officer and head of American Airlines Data Services, is touching down in Rio de Janeiro. He grabs his briefcase and tries to shake off jet lag after flying overnight from New York. As he walks to a line of taxis, the warm, humid air makes his shirt cling to his back.
Copacabana Palace Hotel, por favor.
The taxi cruises through Rio's lush landscape, passing by mountains that rise out of the sea, eventually reaching the famed Copacabana Beach. Looking out the window, Crandall sees hundreds of people playing volleyball and horsing around in the surf. Young women are wearing barely their bikinis. Crandall hasn't packed a bathing suit. He's here for urgent business. Just 3 months ago, Max Hopper, American's tech guru, warned that the American Society of Travel Agents, which is holding its annual convention today in Rio, is making plans to build its own computerized reservation system. American has its own in-house system called Sabre. Other airlines have their in-house systems too. The question is, who will get travel agents on board to use their system? Travel agents don't want to build their own system. They're fairly agnostic about whose system they use, as long as it's not owned and operated by a single airline. Crandall leans on Hopper for help.
If we don't figure this out fast, we could lose control of how Americans' flights show up. We could appear at the bottom of the list on the new computer system the travel agents come up with, and if that happens, well, other airlines get the advantage and we could lose millions.
They plan to meet with the Travel Association's board of directors that night to sell them on the idea of letting the airlines jointly build this new system for them instead of doing it for themselves. That way, American at least gets a piece of the business. They've even come up with a name for the system: Joint Industry Computer Reservation System, or JICRS for short. That night at dinner, Crandall leans into one of the association's directors to make his pitch.
Listen, don't go this alone. Together, we can build a state-of-the-art system. And I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. The carriers will pay for a feasibility study to get us started. American is ready to put in $200,000, and I'll personally meet with United and TWA and Eastern and convince them to do the same. So what do you say?
The director nods.
Bob, let's do it.
Crandall breathes a sigh of relief, maybe even elation. Not only will American be helping to develop the system, but the travel agents have agreed to put Hopper in charge of JICRS. As Crandall heads back to the airport the next day, he boards the plane with a sense of accomplishment. But this is not a static industry. It's constantly evolving. What Crandall doesn't know is that in his drive to create a revolutionary new system, he's actually just sparked the start of a multi-million dollar battle. And this ain't no booze-fueled price war, no. This battle will be fought on computer screens, and it will be mission critical. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. You're listening to the third episode of our Southwest versus American Airlines series, Aviation Cyber Wars. In our last episode, Southwest Airlines used a massive booze giveaway to win a fair war against Braniff, putting the fledgling airline on course toward its first annual profit. And Southwest has won a legal standoff to stay at Love Field, for now. The battle now moves from the sky to the computer monitors. It's the spring of 1975. The war in Vietnam is winding down. Watergate has toppled a president. Lowrider is topping the Billboard charts.
All my friends know the Lowrider.
The economy is stuck. Unemployment is high. Fuel prices are spiking thanks to an oil embargo. Inflation at 9% is gouging a hole in people's pockets. Americans are learning a new term that sums all of this up, stagflation. Inside a swanky hotel bar in Chicago that spring, Crandall is schmoozing United Airlines CEO Dick Ferris.
We're all getting killed out there, Dick. I've almost lost count of the number of planes we've had to sell or ground.
I'd like to lose count, Bob, but I see the bad numbers even in my dreams.
Well, the good news is that we're making great progress with Jickers.
Yes, the Joint Industry Computer Reservation System, Jickers, is happening. American is partnering with United, TWA, and Eastern Airlines to create a system that merges the individual airline's proprietary reservation technology and also addresses the needs of the travel agents. If they can build this system just right, they'll jointly control how most flights are booked and they'll get a windfall in booking fees, likely including fees from upstarts like Southwest, who will have to pay to have their flights listed.
Dick, once we get this system into travel agents' offices, I think it'll revolutionize the industry.
Sure, I mean, it's nice.
Crandall is taken aback by Ferris's lack of enthusiasm. He tries to get a reaction from United's CEO.
Look, Dick, this is exciting stuff. I mean, come on. Giving people more insight into what flights are available and what price they're going to pay, that's the future of our business. We'll have more information about what kind of passengers are booking what kind of flights, and we'll be able to make bookings faster. Now, that efficiency is going to help us through this damn stagflation. We beat this with technology, don't you see?
Yep, of course.
Crandall starts to wonder if Ferris is up to something. Crandall's heard that United plans to start selling its own reservation system called Apollo. It will be a standalone booking product for travel agents and major corporations. After the meeting with Ferris, Crandall calls Max Hopper.
Max, I want you to find out everything you can about what United is doing with Apollo.
Hopper used to work at United and still has friends within the company. He starts making calls. As he waits to find out, finally, he gets a call back from a former colleague, one who still works at United.
Max, I'm going to warn you. United is going to roll out Apollo as a standalone system. That's happening no matter what happens with Jickers.
Hopper hangs up and immediately gets Crandall on the line.
Bob, we got trouble. Apollo's definitely going to market. United is going to drop out of Jickers.
The only thing keeping Jickers together is that the major carriers and the travel agents are working on it jointly. If United pulls out, then the travel agents will be free to buy the best computerized reservation system they can from whatever provider they want. Maybe United or TWA or Eastern or American or maybe IBM or some other technology leader. But Crandall tells Hopper he believes they have an edge over United.
The hell with United. We'll beat them to market with Sabre. And we'll give agents what they want. Worldwide flight, hotel, and rental car information. They want an accounting system, we'll give them what they want. No one else will.
But to do that, though, Crandall needs money. A lot of it. The timing stinks. With this wobbly economy, fewer people are flying, and American has grounded many of its planes. But Crandall makes his pitch to the board for $10 million anyway.
Gentlemen, I know this is a very troubled company, but this technology is the future of our business. Now, if we control the reservation systems, we not only get the booking fees, but we can make sure that American rises to the top when agents are looking at their monitors.
He gets his money. It's April, 1976. In the offices of Heritage Travel in Boston, owner Don Sohn, a board member of the American Society of Travel Agents, stands in front of the first Sabre terminal to ever be installed. The terminal is a hulking thing, the size of a large microwave. The big white monitor sits on a custom-built desk. A thick black keyboard lies on the desk in front of the monitor's monochrome display. A phone receiver rests in a cradle beside the keyboard. The phone connects the Sabre terminal to multiple databases. Americans, TWAs, Pan Ams, Uniteds. Everyone in the office forms a semicircle around Sohn as he takes a seat in front of the monitor. Like everyone else in his business, he relies on the official airline guide, a book that lists every flight from every airline on every day of the week. To book a flight, travel agents find the day they want to travel, find flights around the time of day they want to go, then call the airlines offering those flights and find out the pricing. That is, if the airlines haven't changed their schedules by then and if there are even seats available by the time they make or just finish the phone call. At best, that process takes 15 minutes. At worst, an hour or more.
Okay, let's see. So I key in my ID number and passcode. Now I have to request a city pair. Let's try Syracuse and Dallas. So now I enter the date, November 21st. And that's the S key. Wait a minute. Flight times and seats. Oh, but I forgot to key in the airline I wanted to search. It just defaulted to American Airlines flights. And now I hit execute. And wow, just a couple of minutes, we've done it.
For the first time, an airline reservation has been made electronically from a device not located at a facility owned by an airline. United's Apollo is still 5 months away from being ready for market, but Sabre is online and Crandall's salespeople are inking deals with dozens of the biggest travel agencies in the country. The future belongs to Sabre and American Airlines. But the company has paid a high price for that lead. To save money, it's now contemplating a corporate relocation out of Manhattan and into Dallas, the home of Southwest Airlines.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Thank you.
December, 1974. At the Fairmont Hotel in Dallas, there's a huge charity event taking place. Herb Kelleher, Southwest Airlines attorney, is back-slapping and making wisecracks as he makes his way around the room, a glass of whiskey in his hand. This is Kelleher's kind of scene. Suddenly, Kelleher is jostled from behind. The room is packed. Someone must have had a few too many, Kelleher thinks to himself. Then, he's shoved again, harder this time.
What the hell?
He spins around. The culprit is Lawrence Harding, the CEO of Braniff Airways. Braniff has been jousting with Southwest Airlines in court and at airports across Texas ever since Southwest received its certificate to fly in 1968. Like Southwest, Braniff is based in Dallas. Like Southwest, Braniff's customers are devotees of its brand. Like Southwest, Braniff sells sex appeal with its hostesses. The two men puff out their chests and face each other.
Lawrence, nice to see you. Is it Kelleher?
Braniff flies all over the world, but it has lost market share out of its home base to Southwest. The way Lawrence sees it, Southwest is an interloper in his territory, a cheap knockoff of Braniff's stylish brand.
Shouldn't you be in court, Kelleher?
Braniff and Texas International have been suing Southwest for so long that the company now calculates its annual legal costs on a per-flight basis, which comes to about $40 in revenue every time a Southwest plane takes off. Kelleher hates that. Kelleher steps forward. He's only inches from Harding's face. His fists clench. Harding is staring directly into his eyes, and he's not stepping back. Mary Wells, Lawrence Harding's wife, sees what's happening and rushes toward the two men.
Now, gentlemen, this is a sophisticated event. Stop acting like schoolyard bullies. But Mary, this son of a...
He takes a deep breath and walks away. Kelleher takes a swig of bourbon and smiles at Wells.
Thank you, Mary. Good seeing you, too.
2 months later, on Valentine's Day, 1975, a federal grand jury will indict Braniff and Texas International for colluding to interfere with Southwest's operations, including coordinating their lawsuits and pressuring vendors not to work with Southwest. And as a sign as to how ridiculous things got, the court tells Southwest's competitors that they can't block its access to a fuel pump at Houston's International Airport. It's the summer of 1976, and meanwhile, in Washington, lawmakers are trying to find a way to jumpstart the stalled economy. To stimulate business, they're looking to undo regulations. The highly regulated airline industry is a perfect test case. Southwest Airlines isn't concerned about deregulation. Company executives say they welcome it and the new competition it'll bring. Southwest's leaders are so confident in their business models, they believe that once regulations are peeled back, they'll be able to rule the skies. And now, Southwest, which has 5 airplanes and flies between Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and the Rio Grande Valley, becomes the poster child of what a deregulated airline industry might look like. The company finished 1975 with 1.1 million passengers, a 900% increase over its debut year of 1971. Separate House and Senate committees have been holding hearings on airline deregulation. Not far away, at a dimly lit theater in Washington, a panel discussion is about to get underway. Bigwigs from the airlines are there, as well as the head of the Civil Aeronautics Board, the federal regulatory group controlling the major airlines. Southwest's Lamar Muse spots Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy, a lead proponent of deregulation.
Senator, I hope you come down to Texas someday and fly on our airline. Master Muse, I'd be delighted. But if we can get deregulation through Congress, well, maybe you'll just start flying to Boston. Senator, we'd be delighted to do that.
The panel of lawmakers, top airline CEOs, including Muse and airline industry regulators, takes their seats. American Airlines' Albert Casey, whose business relies on a regulated environment to survive, opens
by arguing for continuing the status quo.
There is nothing wrong with the airline industry or the form of regulation under which it operates. Those who would deregulate believe that once airlines are freed from regulation, some economic magic will permit fares to go down and profits to go up.
That won't happen, Muse chuckles, and everyone looks at him.
Oh, it's definitely possible we're doing it. Just look at what we did last year. In 1974, about 120,000 people flew out of the Rio Grande Valley to the major cities in Texas. Southwest entered that market in February 1975. In the next 12 months, you know how many passengers we carried? 275,000.
Other carriers could do the same thing if their hands were not tied by regulation.
Now, it would also help if other carriers offered our kind of service. You know, service with a smile and a warm welcome rather than a scowl.
The panel wraps up. Casey wanders over to Muse as he's removing his microphone. His airline dwarfs Southwest, but the winds are shifting, and he knows it.
Well, congratulations, Lamar. You killed us.
Casey knows that because of Southwest, deregulation is coming, and American Airlines can't stop it. In the next episode of Southwest versus American Airlines, deregulation is coming, and Southwest figures it will be the chief beneficiary. But it's about to take an unexpected hit. Herb Kelleher is looking for the exit.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is Episode 3 of Southwest versus American for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. I'm your host, David Brown. Joe Guinto wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Produced by Emily Frost. Kate Young is our associate producer. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Sound designed by Kyle Randall. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez. For Wondery.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.